This is John Gramstrand, and I'm a certified energy specialist for CHS Ag Services in Stephen, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Whitney Pittman and Sierra Doctor. We begin with Harvest Hotline. Harvest Hotline brought to you by Pivot Bio, Amity Technology, the North Dakota Mill, and Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Well, farmers continue to make rapid harvest progress. Dairyland Seed District Sales Manager Keith Rico says harvest is rapidly wrapping up.
They really are, the weather being very nice. Grain moisture has been extremely low, heard as low as 6% moisture. We're by Napoleon, that area. Just things got really dry in central part of North Dakota, down that Watertown area. They got to, and going west on 212 towards Redfield. The crop was above average there, and the averaging area pretty good in considering the prevent plant areas that were there. But storage became an issue, kind of slowed harvest down a little bit, getting corn put away. Some elevators were full up, ethanol plants shutting down early, and so some of that happened. But I'd say we're probably 95% done with corn harvest in South Dakota. So
yields depended a lot on soil moisture.
The average yields in some spots have thought they'd get a little bit more. And the crop that really carried the yields, the guys had extreme moisture, wet, where we had a lot of prevent plant areas. It was actually turned out to be some of the best crops for the most part, because some of those guys caught rains enough even through early July that kind of carried things across. And there are some record crops. SDSU had trials South of Aberdeen, 285 bushel, I think it was 250 plot average at SDSU south of Aberdeen. And let's take up prevent plant areas. That's an area where I've seen sections of ground unplanted down there. So with that, those days planted were like the 22nd, 25th of May, and really good. We have plenty of heat.
Northern parts of South Dakota had a wet start to the planting season. Leola, South Dakota farmer Stephen Callis is happy with how corn harvest has turned out.
Went pretty good. I mean, the spring when we were planting there was kind of a challenge. We were pretty wet, but overall, I guess yields were there. So actually, for the most part, we did a few prevent plant acres. But I guess looking into the summer, we kind of missed out on those timely rains, but especially going into that R1 stage of corn. But yeah, overall, I guess the yield was there and test weight was good, so can't really complain.
Callis says the weather this year has been challenging with high winds, dryness, and the derecho that swept through this spring. The crops were mostly unaffected.
The winter rye and oats got kind of dinged from it, but I mean, the corn and beans, they still look good, so we got pretty lucky there. Beans are exceptional, and the corn was dry too, so that really helps. It kind of varied, I mean, depending on what farms you went to, where they caught the rain. But overall average, I'd say we're probably around 145, 150. Which is pretty good for around our area. So yeah, above average, I would say, on the beans and the corn this year.
Cooperstown, North Dakota farmer Scott Tramby ramped up his sunflower harvest with very little mishaps.
Very good. The sunflowers were dry. I sold between 9 to 12% moisture. Only had one fire at the end, so that was pretty good considering. Yeah, they went over between 2,000 to 2,500 pounds to the acre, so that was very good. That's what I've been hearing between that 2,000 to 2,500 pounds, you know, right around that range or higher, but that's a pretty good number, you know, considering how dry it was in July and August.
Tranby says he always makes sure to take precautions when the sunflowers are very dry.
They're kind of prone to that, but that's why I keep a couple fire extinguishers on board, and I have a water tank in the field to spray it down. We had to use it the last, very, very last day. Actually, it was really good till then. So I think what happens with the combines is that they get static electricity built up, you know. How can I put it this way? All of a sudden, you got little fires all over the combine because the static electricity builds up, you know, not just one spot.
Harvest Hotline is presented by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, the North Dakota Mill, and Pivot Bio.
Wheat and corn markets continue to be pressured by the latest Ukraine export corridor news, while the soybean market started to move higher this morning. Comstock Investments market analyst Joe Camp says the soybean market is really trading on its own fundamentals.
We have to tie that to two things. One, crude oil. And we see that processing margins around the country in some areas record firm here. We know that soybeans over the last several months have lagged relative to corn and wheat. So, for example, the corn harvest price insurance average, right? It's up over February, but the soybean mark was down.
Camp says the weakness supports crush demand.
Still supports, ultimately, even at these levels, these processors buying the beans and crushing them into meal and oil, and especially bean oil. Again, whether it's tied to the crude and the biodiesel or renewable diesel processing, you also have the edible oil storyline out there and the rising prices for palm oil and the competition that we know produces a substitute effect for the bean oil. So new highs for the bean oil, definitely leading the way for the soy. It's strong to see this type of demand at this time of the year, at a time when we're also worried about exports.
Grain traders are awaiting this afternoon's Federal Reserve's Board's interest rate hike decision. Van On & Company market analyst Christy Van On says a 0.75 percentage point rate hike is widely expected by traders.
And I think the big takeaway here, though, is not necessarily the rates. It's the rhetoric around it. You know, if they make this aggressive rate hike again, what is the rhetoric moving forward? Are they going to continue with those? Are they going to say they think this is enough and they're going to see how these rates kind of deal with inflation? I think those are the key things to look at once we get those interest rate information, but it's not surprising to kind of see that risk-off stance. Now,
Van On says the risk-off trade could continue right up until the Fed's announcement.
This is what happens in markets that are extremely high, is that there's a lot of risk on the table. And so we see these, and we see probably, to be honest, once you woke up and saw that these markets were all lower, a little bit of panic selling. And when you look at it, basis levels are so strong in so many areas right now that it is making up for, let's say you wake up and corn's down 15. Well, an ethanol plant here throughout the Dakotas has increased or has improved their basis, you know, nearly 30 cents in the last 2 weeks. So you kind of are coming ahead still on the cash side of things, even with a lower day like today.
Bids at the six regional grain elevators followed by the Red River Farm Network saw minor changes over the past week. The spring wheat bid at Warren, Minnesota improved 20 cents to 50 under the December Minneapolis futures contract, and Findlay, North Dakota basis bid improved 10 cents to 60 under. Corn basis at all six elevators was mostly unchanged, and the most notable change in soybean basis was at Grebner, South Dakota. Soybean basis there went from 15 under the January contract to 20 cents over the January contract.
This is Transformation. Farm prices are high, but so are input costs. David Hess says the Transformation Program is a free confidential resource available to farmers dealing with financial problems. The farm advocate may see some options not seen by the farmer.
Oh, yes. That's happened many a time before where we've been able to end up coming up with an option that he hadn't seen. He's just looking at present, right now, exactly what he's being faced with, and not expanding beyond that. That's the importance of the conferences that we end up having. One I'm thinking of right now, they were able to end up coming up with a new lender that was willing to take them on.
Visit the Minnesota Department of Agriculture website for more information on the Farm Advocate Program. You can hear this entire conversation on the podcast tab at rrfn.com.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Farmer sentiment weakened in October as the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer fell 10 points to a reading of 102. Purdue University Ag Economist Jim Mintert says this is not the lowest reading seen, but it's getting close.
And really takes us back to levels we haven't seen since the barometer started in the very beginning of our survey, which was the late 2015, early 2016 period. And the interesting thing about that is farm incomes in, say, 21 and 22 have been substantially higher than they were back in that 2015-2016 era. So the decline in sentiment that we've seen is really not so much about farm income. It's really about uncertainty and people's anxiety about what's taking place and what the future holds.
Interest rates will be a focus for the Ag Barometer going forward.
I think one of the things that we're going to really keep an eye on is what's taking place with interest rates and how that impacts people's attitudes, not only about their farming operation for the upcoming year, but especially with respect to what impact that might have on farmland values. you know, the question the farmers have been asking me and probably been asking you as well out there in your part of the world is, how long can this go on with these record high prices as interest rates climb? And I think we're going to start to see some impact, but it could be a while before that takes place.
U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announced today that the Biden administration is investing $73 million in 21 grant projects through the first round of the Meat and Poultry Processing Expansion Program. This announcement will help expand meat and poultry processing capacity, which in turn increases competition, supports producer income, and helps to strengthen the food supply chain. In addition, the administration is investing an additional $150 million through the Meat and Poultry Intermediary Lending Program and the Food Supply Chain Guaranteed Loan Program.
A national rollout of meat and poultry investments from USDA is helping meat processors in Mott and Mandan, North Dakota. USDA Rural Development State Director Aaron Oban is announcing these grants today.
So through the passage of the American Rescue Plan, rural development was given a significant responsibility to design and launch programs that would respond to major challenges within the country's food supply chain. And, you know, obviously we experienced and made obvious those challenges at the height of the COVID pandemic. The priority of the Biden administration to address this challenge created opportunity right here for North Dakotans. And we're thrilled to award $10 million to the Lewis and Clark Development Council based in Mandan, North Dakota, and nearly $500,000, half a million to South 40 Beef in Mott, North Dakota.
Oban says these grants help not just processing facilities, but consumer prices.
Both these will create opportunity to expand capacity and support in-state meat processing, and we know that that is a win-win for our producers, for businesses, and for consumers on keeping prices low at the grocery store and on the table.
North Dakota's beef pilot program, powered by beef, is partnering with schools from universities to high schools across the state of North Dakota. Nicole Wardner, North Dakota Beef Commission Consumer Marketing and Industry Relations Specialist, says the University of North Dakota is even conducting an independent project separate from the Powered by Beef program that's providing data to support beef's nutritional benefits.
It's a program designed to help the football team as of right now. It's a pilot program. We fully support them because it's allowing their student athletes on the football team to see the full benefits of what beef can provide in a meal. And what they're finding is some measurables. They're seeing more performance halfway through the season. They're seeing extended stamina when they're in a game or in an extended period of time. They're making it through the fourth quarter.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Mexico's ban on genetically modified imports is on track to cut its imports of U.S. corn by half through increased domestic production by 2024. National Corn Growers Association Director of Public Policy, Angus Kelly, says the turnaround timeline is just too quick.
The reason things are coming to a head is because if the decrees, and we take the Mexican government at their word, if the decrees are fully implemented by next year, well, we're harvesting biotech corn today. We're purchasing our seed corn for the spring of 2023, and that's going to be biotech. And my members, and I dare say I speak for other crops, they're not changing their agricultural systems. They're not changing their soil management and the reduction in insecticide use thanks to biotechnology. So we ain't changing, and so we wonder, are we on a collision course?
Kelly says NCGA is urging trade representatives in D.C. to enforce the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
So what we're simply asking is for the U.S. trade rep to say, look, not only for corn, but for soybeans and canola and cotton and a number of other biotech crops, which is like 90-plus percent biotech, we need you to live up to the letter in the law of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and, you know, let's continue our trading friendship. If I could say one more thing, guess what our biggest ag export is to Mexico? Well, it's corn. In 2021, we sold about $4.7 billion of corn to Mexico. Soybeans is a distant second. The top 10 commodities are all impacted.
Checking markets before we leave you this noon hour. December wheat in Minneapolis down 44 and a quarter cents. Chicago December wheat's down 59 and a half. Kansas City down 52 and a half cents. December corn's down 11 and a half at 686 and a quarter. March down 11. January soybeans are a penny and a quarter higher right now, 1449. March soybeans 2.5 cents higher, 1456 and three quarters. And January canola trading $11.10 a metric ton higher. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. This is the Red River Farm Network.